Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back. I'm sure that you all watched that debate last night. I know many hundreds of you were tweeting back and forth with me as we were watching the debate and making our commentary. We're going to have the commentary live on the air now, so we want you to join us. I know this is something you all are into, and I want to hear what you think about what you saw last night, not just the horse race, who won and lost, because, you know, I get so tired of that part of it sometimes, but talking about what substances were there, what was not there, what was missing, and what they said to us. You know, I think that if you're a Republican or leaning towards Mitt Romney, oh, then he did a good job and they tied. If you love Barack Obama, then, well, he won. He came back strong and whipped his butt. Well, you know, all that stuff is lovely, but what we want to talk about is what the substance was there, what you thought about what you heard and saw, what came up about foreign policy, what came up about our economy and whether they were satisfied, what lies were told or not told during the course of this conversation that we saw last night. And also the issue of women was very issues around women were very prominent. So we are joined this hour, a little bit more than that actually, by our guest. Joining us by phone here is Erin Gloria Ryan, and she is editor at Jezebel.com. Erin, great to have you with us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Tyrone Keyes is by phone. He should be in the studio, but he's not.
my apologies, Mark, but I appreciate you having me on the phone.
Tyrone is a principal in the Maryland-based strategic and legislative consulting firm Arc Adaptus. In the studio, Dr. John Bullock, professor of political science at Towson University. Must be a Towson day. And Dr. Richard Vatz, professor in the Department of Mass Communications Studies at Towson. Good to have you in the studio, Rick and John. 410-319-8888. Join us all here with your thoughts and comments. We have people calling in already, so we'll get to their comments. But let's go around the room and just get your sense of what you think America heard. Oh, and Bob Sorenby, come on in, please, and have a seat. Bob Sorenby is with us, who is editor of the Daily Howler. 410-319-8888 is the number here. So let's get your sense of what you saw and or heard last night. Erin, let me begin with you and get to just an overarching framework of what you think America got from last night, if it, anything.
Sure. Well, last night's debate had a very different tenor than the first debate. The obvious difference, first, the format. It was a lot more personal, and the candidates were moving around, so that was different. But the most important thing that I think was different was last night, both of the candidates spent substantial time discussing women's issues. They used the word women 31 times last night in the debate, as compared to no times in the first debate. So that's a very marked difference. In terms of the substance behind what both of the candidates were saying, you know, obviously I'm biased, but what I am seeing today is that Romney did poorly, but more importantly, Obama was able to communicate an actual agenda and actually reach out to women voters. Now, when I say Romney did poorly, I mean specifically the now infamous binders full of women answer, which on its face sounds like a very awkwardly delivered but well-intentioned story. Mitt Romney said that when he was governor, he actively sought out women to hire, but it was difficult to find them, so we put together this task force, and they found qualified women. But the reality is actually somewhat disturbing. What happened was that Mitt Romney didn't request a list of qualified women. The binders full of women were actually assembled by a nonpartisan group before he was even in office. And when he was in office, they were handed to him. So last night he sort of tried to kind of pull a fast one, and it didn't go over very well. Obama, though, on the other hand, did a pretty good job doing what he personally hasn't done so far in the campaign, which is link issues of women's health that had sort of been turned into like a niche concern. And he was able to link them with economics. And that's the first time I've ever heard him say that contraception and abortion and women's health and family economy issues are actually large-scale economic issues. And I thought that was very, very well done.
And let me get Tyrone to jump in with your overall thoughts, and overarching thoughts, and we're going to come back to some very specific things.
Okay, yeah. These debates are interesting. I tried something new last night, and I listened to the debate as opposed to watching it on television.
That's interesting.
And I thought that stylistically, I thought that, you know, audio only, I saw the president as winning the stylistic aspect of the debate. I think that, unfortunately or fortunately, most people go into these debates kind of like you go into a prize fight. You know, I'm with Muhammad Ali, do or die, and the other guy's with Frazier, no matter what. So the vast majority of the electorate does not go into it objectively. There are very few undecideds out there at this late stage in the game. So you're going to be looking for any possible zinger from your guy or gaffe from the other guy. And I think, I'm sorry, but the young lady, she brought up an interesting point about the,
Aaron Ryan.
The binders full of women. That was, you know, people seized on that. Probably wasn't the most articulate way to put it, but...
that always seems to be his excuse, though. That it wasn't articulate.
But I think that it's also being construed, you know, by supporters of President Obama as maybe a window into Mitt Romney's condescension of women. So very interesting. I think that one thing that I did watch on television after the debate was the post-debate polling and the focus groups. And it was clear that from the polling, President Obama was the victor. But what was very telling was that Mitt Romney scored consistently high in the questions such as, who do you think would handle the economy better, foreign policy better? And these were questions that were being asked on CNN and MSNBC, whose audiences are just about as fair and balanced as Fox's.
So, and very quickly, let's go around the room here because we're going to get, we have to take a break, and I'm going to get to the phones and get people to join us here.
Well, most definitely in any debate, you're going to see individuals answer questions but then pivot to their talking points. So I think it's true that both candidates did that. Pretty certain that Obama really comes out the victor in this, in that he actually in this debate pushed Romney more in terms of some of the things he was asserting and then also put forward some of his ideas, sort of defending his record and talking about some things that he has done, sort of leading off with things like Lilly Ledbetter, talking about that in terms of pay equity. So it wasn't just rhetoric. He was actually backing up with some policy. And also in terms of his demeanor, it seemed like he was connecting more with the audience there.
We have to take a very brief break. We're going to come right back and hear our other guests and really get into a head-to-head to hear about what we heard. We'll hear from Rick Vatz and Bob Somerby if we can find where he went. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back. We're going to get to these calls coming in here, 410-319-8888. I'm going to quickly hear from my guests and turn back to Aaron Gloria Ryan, who only has a little bit of time with us, and get to the issues that she raised. She is, of course, the editor of Jezebel. Tyrone Keyes is with us. John Bullock, a professor of political science at Towson. Rick Vatz, professor of mass comm at Towson, and more. In the studio with us now is Bob Somerby, who was on the sheet not to be here at 6:15, but I said, nah, come in now, editor of the Daily Howler. And Rick, very quickly.
Let me just say I have a blog, Red Maryland blog, if you want to look at it, redmaryland.blogspot.com.
Which means is that a communist blog, Red Maryland?
No, it's just a blog. It's a blog on the debate. It's a blog on the debate. I thought that Obama clearly made stylistic points and won on style yesterday. He came in off the first debate in which he looked kind of strange and he looked hierarchically inferior, came in aggressive, articulate. He was confident. He was unbowed. I was very impressed by him stylistically. I thought he was very, very articulate, and I thought he made his points well. However, on substance, I really thought that Romney brought it to him. I thought about an hour through the debate, Romney brought up all of the economic weaknesses of the Obama campaign, and he brought up the campaign in general, economics, foreign policy. He brought up the fact that unemployment has hovered around 8% throughout his presidency. The fact that 23 million people are out of work, especially when you count the people who have given up searching for work. He talked about cutting the deficit, but he doubled the deficit. There are more people on food stamps. It just seemed to be consistently that there are problems economically that Barack Obama doesn't want to discuss. And then Barack Obama didn't reply to this. And Mitt Romney got into the foreign policy. He talked about Libya, Iran, Israel, Syria. And the only one that was answered was Libya with the help of Candy Crowley, which parenthetically I thought was an intrusion into the debate where she became a principal on the issue. And I thought that was inappropriate for her to be. So in sum, I thought that stylistically Barack Obama couldn't have been better. I thought substantively that Romney won the debate.
Interesting. I can see some people don't agree. And very quickly, Bob, let us go back to Aaron.
Oh yeah. Well, I don't know that anyone. It's easy to run against Obama, and here's why. If you believe that the president is daddy and the economy is our allowance, and every time the economy is bad, daddy isn't giving us our full allowance, then it's easy to run against Obama because the economy's been bad. But the economy isn't our allowance, and the president doesn't run the economy. And so everyone understands the economy has been bad. So it's easy to be Mitt Romney now because it really is easy. He spent the last 2 years repeating unflattering things about Obama. There's a lot of terrible things to say about the economy. So if you decide the economy is the president, there's a lot of unflattering things to say. So it's good being Mitt Romney in a debate. There's a lot of things to say. Now, I don't think that's really a sensible way to view the economy, but it's easy to be the challenger when the economy is very bad.
So, and Aaron, I know you only have like 10 or 15 minutes left for this. I'm sorry, I didn't look at my notes correctly and realized that you were leaving early. So my apologies.
Oh, it's okay.
But let's go back to what you were talking about. I'm curious what you pulled and gleaned from that debate, especially around what Mitt Romney was saying around women's issues, whether it was Ledbetter or whether it was the women in his binder.
Right. Well, I think that building on what the last gentleman said, I would disagree about economic. I would disagree that Romney won on economic issues, but I think he had some really great opportunities, especially when it comes to specifically women's economic issues. He has some really great damning pieces of data. He has the rate of women in poverty, which is really disgracefully high. He has the food stamps bit. He has the number of female jobs lost. And all of those are really great indictments of whether or not it's the president's fault. All of them are great indictments of this exact moment that we are in right now. And the problem was that Romney wasn't able to bring it home. Like, there wasn't anything. He didn't give specifics about what exactly he would do specifically to make sure that 3 million women were not in poverty anymore. You know, he didn't give anything specific, which I thought was a missed opportunity for him.
Well, one thing he wants to do is he wants to lower taxes on small businesses, which taxes have gone up to now 45% under President Obama. And every time he brings up this issue, President Obama remains silent to say, well, we've had 17 policies that have helped small business, which Investors Daily just said that of those 17, 14 have expired and 3 are minimal. So I think that there are areas in which Barack Obama's ideology makes it impossible for him to help the economy, and one of them is appreciation that the engine of our economy is small business.
And I think to Aaron's point, I'd like to say this. I just don't think Mitt Romney looks at the situation as balkanized as Obama does. I think that Mitt Romney sees a need to improve wages in general and does not and sees the need to improve the unemployment situation in general and doesn't look at it as a black problem or a Hispanic problem or a woman's issue. The economy is an American issue. And I think I don't think he would have had a comeback to that because I don't think he sees the issue in such
sure,
a balkanized fashion.
Sure, I can definitely appreciate that. But there are specific reasons that women are more likely to fall into poverty. And those are issues that he could have specifically addressed. Access to low-cost contraception is a preventer of poverty in women because kids are really expensive. So is childbirth and child rearing. Everything about having children will change your economic trajectory, especially as a woman. Mitt Romney also brought up single mothers last night, which I found really interesting. He brought up single mothers, or he said single parents, but that's kind of dog whistle talk for single mothers because most single parents are single mothers. He brought it up at the Muppet is this kind of this weird, oblique in way to trace crime back to single parent families. And I found that really interesting that in a woman's question about assault rifles, he brought up single parents as one of the causes of problems with assault rifles. What he could have done was talk about how to make it so that women feel more of an, you know, so women can actually control their fertility, so that women who are low income have access to health care, have access to health screenings, have access to contraception. I mean, it seems like a kind of no-brainer.
And I tend to agree with that premise. I mean, if you think about what Obama was saying, he was actually talking to women, where it seemed like Romney was talking about women. So when Obama talks about Planned Parenthood and talks about the services it provides, and not just contraceptives, but also mammograms and things like that are important to women's health. When you look at Romney talking about women, he makes comments, you know, not just about, you know, the whole binder piece, but then, you know, talking about women who need to come home so they can make dinner for their husbands. And so it's sort of this assumption of the woman's role versus Obama talking about the fact that some women are actually the chief breadwinners in their household. And so talking to them about real economic issues and tying women's health to those issues. Again, when you look at the economy, you know, talking about from Obama's perspective, talking about even the manufacturing jobs and the fact that some jobs are not going to be coming back, and how do we shape the country for the future to actually prepare for those jobs of the future? And I think that's where some of the difference is in terms of some of the policies, and even in terms of detail, where you see Romney lacking serious detail when it comes to the tax policy. He says things like pick a number, you know, things like that are not very specific. And then he gets hit with it being sketchy. So I think Romney really found himself in a place where he had to actually defend the things he was saying, unlike the last debate. And he actually fell short in that regard this time.
There's a tremendous poll disparity between the support of married women for Barack Obama and Mitt Romney and unmarried women for Barack Obama and Mitt Romney, that married women are about even between the two now. And unmarried women, there's a tremendous disparity of support for Barack Obama. And I do think that there is a lack of identification. Part of it, I think, is age. But I also think that part of it is lifestyle. When a lot of people focus, for example, on this binder metaphor, I think that's because that's a business metaphor. And there are a lot of people who are not comfortable with that sort of language with respect to a businessman. And this is typical throughout the campaign when people are unfamiliar with his arguments on small business and why it is so important that we lower taxes on small business. A lot of people just think – a lot of people, especially moderators, by the way, every moderator who has been confronted with the issue of small business has said – some variation of, all right, let's move on. None of them wants to talk about it because none of them knows anything about small business.
Well, we can get into small business in a minute because, I mean, I've interviewed lots of small businessmen. I am one, and I think that a lot of the issues around the taxes are really do not affect most businesses. And I think there's an argument that's being used that doesn't have a lot of weight to it. That people use all the time, and we can get into that in a minute. But
okay.
Let me go to the phone side, and let Erin kind of have another thought before she has to go. And then we'll 410-319-8888. And Fran in Gaithersburg, you're on the air.
Hi, Mark.
Hi, Fran.
Everybody.
Welcome.
I'd like to make just about four comments here, real quick, for you. I caught the debate around 9:30, and when I saw that they were talking at each other and talking over each other, I just said, let's throw the towel in and just jump ship, because I can't deal with this type of debate. I just, anybody who does it, I can't deal with it. But I did see the highlight with Andrea Mitchell on NBC Nightly News that they did afterwards. I like the fact that Romney has finally admitted that throughout the campaign, he views a lot of his stuff through his Mormon eyes. And he started giving his resume, you know, that he did a ministry for 10 years and all the stuff in it. I like the fact that he finally has admitted that, because I have seen that from the very beginning. And I think that that is why he is faltering the way that he is. The other thing is, at the end, Andrea Mitchell, they gave all the facts behind the things that the guys were saying, which I thought was very eye-opening for the American public. For Mitt Romney to be saying these types of things, and Andrea Mitchell would say, yes, the president didn't do this because of the fact that in 2010, the oil, that's when we had the oil spill in the Gulf and all these kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
That is very important, because we are seeing how they, the politicians, are taking things out of context to confuse and manipulate us. And we need the facts and the truth to make an informed, proper decision. The other thing I wanted to say here was that anytime you have an extremist, be it left or right, in a leadership position, you put this country in a dangerous position to send us back to the dark ages. And you should not ever allow any politician or leader to do that.
Who's the extremist?
As far as Barack Obama is concerned, he has not finished doing what he needs to do. And I feel we need to let him do that. And that's pretty much all my comments on it. And good luck to everybody in November, and I hope you make the right choice for yourself.
Thank you, Fran. Aaron, you want to comment? I know you have to roll pretty soon.
Yeah, you know what? I really appreciated the caller's comment about the contentiousness of the debate, because I think that I don't want to stereotype genders here, but I, as a woman, find watching people argue a generally stressful exercise. And, you know, watching politicians kind of go at each other like that is a stressful thing. I think my mom told me that she had to turn it off because she was too stressed out. So I thought that was really interesting, that the candidates have really kicked it up a notch and they're going at each other. And I hope that this doesn't cause women to shut down or tune out, because it's very important that they are paying attention. And it's very important that they're informing themselves, even if it means that they have to watch two guys fight on TV. It's very important that they stay on top of this.
And I think what you said is important. And I think one of the problems here with that debate was just as was described. I think, I mean, it was like two bulls on an athletic field going at it, as opposed to with a lot of substance missing. And one of the things missing on this panel are enough women on this panel tonight. And I want to make a public apology about that.
you're okay.
No, I mean it. I'm serious.
Tweeting, you can woman up for me when I leave.
I will do that. I'll do it. I mean, because I.
Get out your binder.
I think that part of the problem is that a lot of the bellicoseness in the debates last night hid the fact that neither man really hit a lot of substance, as far as I was concerned. Either one. You know, I think that Romney is never honest about his tax reform, because he can't be, because if you actually read what he said, people would go, oh, my God, I'm not going to vote for that. But then Barack Obama wasn't honest, let's say, about the pipeline, because you know that when Barack Obama becomes president in January, he's going to sign the pipeline, he's going to allow it to be built. And nobody is talking honestly about what the pipeline does. Either one of them didn't. They didn't talk honestly about the economy in many ways. They didn't talk honestly about the frustrations of Middle East policy. And I think that there was a general tenor of we're going to fight each other, but I didn't hear a lot of what they could. We're really going to. I think America lost out in that debate last night, despite the fact that Barack Obama put himself in a position where he could gain a little, but he lost in the first.
Let me just say, in presidential debates and vice presidential debates, with some exceptions, the aggressor, the person who's more aggressive, usually wins. Now, I can think of a couple of exceptions. I don't think that Palin won against Biden, and I don't think that Dole won against Mondale in 1976.
But that's what I'm just saying, Rick.
Yeah.
I'm saying that's the part I think that we get hung up in, and that's the least important part in terms of what
happens. But I'm just talking about outcome. I'm not talking about whether it makes for a better
debate. I'm saying
that's where we lose.
We're
not in disagreement.
Speaking as someone who's going to vote for Obama, the criticism I'm hearing about Obama, which is absolutely true, Has anyone ever run for president saying less about the next 4 years? I mean, he there's just nothing. He's going to raise taxes 4 points on income above $250,000. That's the entire part. Now, I'm going to vote for Obama, but I think it's astounding, A, with Obama we've gotten this far with nothing proposed, and B, with Romney we have at the center of his campaign a tax plan that is obviously just a confection he came up with in Arizona when everyone else in the Republican field had a crazy tax cut, and he needed a tax cut that sounded like a crazy tax cut because you had to be crazy this year in the Republican primaries. And that's where that plan came from. It was crazy the day it was hatched in February, not 18 months ago, as Obama said in the first debate. So we have Obama, who I'm going to vote for. I have no idea what he's planning to do. And Romney is planning to do something that obviously can't be done. No one can do that because it's mathematically impossible. Well, that's the campaign we have.
What's interesting when you look at this level of aggression that's happened, it's put Obama in a place where he's actually had to become more aggressive. And so it's unfortunate because it pushes out the substance. But look at the first debate. When one is trying to be thoughtful and reserved, that's not necessarily appreciated as much as the red meat out there, battle. And so I think people stylistically said they wanted to see more. Now, in terms of policy, I think there were some real winners that at least Obama was able to talk about. I think talking about immigration again, talking about the Dream Act and things like that, about giving a pathway for young people who are undocumented to actually be successful, the implementation of health care. So those are some things that he may not have said, this is what's going to happen in the next 4 years. But I think you have a track record given what he had done. And I think he spent a lot of time talking about what he didn't do. I think what he did previously. And I think that's part of trying to make up for the last debate. I think he didn't make some of those points earlier. So I think in this debate, he's more, talking about what he did previously. And maybe he'll talk more so about the about
Let me ask this question. I'm sorry.
Tyrone, go ahead. Then we'll come right back.
Yeah.
I disagree with the gentleman on, I think the president's last debate performance had more to do with him just plain not being prepared as opposed to not, wanting to be aggressive. I think if we all go back and look at the movie Rocky III, Rocky didn't prepare for Mr. T, and he got whipped. And that's and plainly what happened. And the president said, you know what, I've got to get out there, I've got to be more aggressive, and I've got to also articulate some points because I'm up against another professional politician. And so I disagree that there seems to be a general reluctance among Obama supporters to just admit that he lost the debate. I'm a Mitt Romney supporter, and I will be voting for him in November. And stylistically, he lost the debate. This has historically, just because you've lost a debate or won a debate, has not necessarily translated into you winning or losing the election. So the new debate formats that we have, which I think last night's format really benefited the president's style, and he was able to shine. But I don't think, again, that it's really influencing a majority of the electorate. You're just in there voting for your guy no matter what.
Let me just say on a couple points. I think that Barack Obama's first debate performance might be more accurately attributed to some complacency, some overconfidence. I mean, that's generally how people act when they are kind of confident and complacent. Also, let me ask you, gentlemen, this. Do you not think that there should be some concern about the fact that Pew polls, PEW polls, have found a tremendous amount of prejudice against Mormons? I mean, you are historically very concerned about discrimination, unfairness, religiously, racially. Are you at all concerned about the fact that the polls show consistent prejudice against Mormons?
Let me jump in real quick and answer it very quickly. I do see that a little bit of that is out there, but I'm not necessarily as concerned about it because, in my opinion, we've crossed the religion Rubicon with the election of John F. Kennedy. So I don't think that would be as large a factor as it would have been if we'd never elected a candidate who was outside of the religious, Judeo-Christian mainstream.
Well, I think there are a couple pieces. One, in terms of Romney versus Obama, I think in the first debate or second debate, one thing you see him doing is actually saying, "No, sir, that's not true." And I think that's something that didn't happen in the previous debate. And I think a lot of people were saying, well, why don't you call out someone for actually telling a lie and saying what it is? And I think there was also that moment where Romney got caught off guard because, again, the moderator accurately pointed out the words that the president used in the Rose Garden.
I disagree, now, by the way. That's not true.
And again, he if you look at the quote, he says there will never be no acts of terror will
right.
ever shake the result.
That's right.
So, again, talking about an act of terror. When you talk about discrimination, I think it's interesting. I think clearly there is some anti-Mormon bias. I think that does exist. I think a lot of that exists from people not understanding Mormon doctrine, especially when you go back to some of the sort of more ugly things when it looks at sort of their divisions in terms of race. But there's also an interesting parallel when you look at the president, who's the first African American president, and some of the coded language that has been used, whether we're talking about food stamps or welfare or anything of the like. And I think he also treads a fine tightrope when it comes to being aggressive. And so one may look at the businessman as being he's aggressive, he's confident, versus the angry black man. And I think he's trying to put himself in a position where he's not characterized as being angry, but then still trying to show that he's competent in the role.
Let me just fact check you.
Please do.
Candy Crowley said that she interjected that he had said that this was an act of terror, and to say no acts of terror will ever shake the resolve of this great nation is not the same as saying this was an act of terror.
Well, let me just complete my point.
In ensuing days, he did not talk about this as an act of terror. And in fact, when he spoke to the United Nations, he spoke to it as a result of that video. He did not refer to this as an act of terror.
But that's what Candy Crowley said, though.
But,
she said that both were true.
She did not.
She
tried to say that, and in her explanation after the debate, she made clear she tried to say that, but she did not.
Let me just say that. This, again, is one of these points that I think I can't say the word I want to say on the air.
Okay.
Who cares?
I mean,
this is just one of these absurd things. You didn't call it terror. Well, it is terror. I mean, it is terror. No, it's not.
Right.
Yes, it is. Who cares? What you're dealing with here is again trying to find this presidential bellicoseness where you're going to stand up and say it's terror. We're going to tear them down.
Right.
We don't need that, and you don't need that in America, and you don't have to have that same kind of. Those attacks, I think what Obama was doing, whether you agree with him or not, was saying, we're not sure what this is yet. We need to look at it without jumping in and saying, oh, it's terrorists, let's go bomb them.
Well, the reason why this matters is there's been a month-long narrative in which Obama and his surrogates were dissembling about what happened. And Susan Rice, the ambassador to the UN, has been at the heart of this. I think there's been a tremendous amount of misrepresentation of what she said on the Sunday shows this week, and the Washington Post did a front page report yesterday that I think was just disgraceful, just completely misrepresented. But it's been going on for a month. And I said today in the Daily Howler, I think Mitt Romney kind of went for the con. I mean, there's been a bit of a right-wing con going on about what Susan Rice said. It's been accepted by large elements of the mainstream media. And I think Romney thought there was just no way Obama could have used the term act of terror the next day because we've all heard for a month that they were saying, well, it was some little demonstration and someone's firecracker went off and suddenly four people were dead. And that is not what Susan Rice said. But I think it ties into that large narrative about dissembling and deception aimed at the White House. And it's a very dangerous theme for Obama in this campaign. So it's important that progressives and liberals get clear on what Susan Rice did and didn't say. Now, and a lot of people said a lot of things, but there's been a lot of misrepresentation, and that was what's at the heart of what Romney was talking about last night.
We have to take a break.
Okay.
I'm going to come right. You can't leave that. The door's locked. 410-319-8888. We want to hear from you out there. What's your thoughts on this debate, on what you're hearing our guests say this evening about where this election is and what's being held out as an important debate, and did it really hit the mark on any sides? 410-319-8888. We're here with Dr. John Bullock, Dr. Rick Vatz, Tyrone Keyes, and Bob Summerby, and you at 410-319-8888. We'll be right back.
Support for WEAA is provided by
the Taharka Brothers presenting Elemental, Earth, Wind, and Fire, a party and poetry rap freestyle jam in support of the Baltimore Urban Delegate League, Saturday, October 20th from 1 until 4 p.m. at Taharka Brothers Factory, 3515 Clipper Mill Road. More info online at windpoweredbemore.com or 410-905-9088.
The MBA program at Morgan State University, offering the Morgan Leadership Advantage, hosts their information session in room 316 of the new Student Center on the campus of Morgan State University, Wednesday, October 17th from 6 p.m. until 8 p.m. All majors are welcome. For more information, 443-885-3396 or online at facebook.com/MorganMBA.
And members like you. Thank you. Sometimes the best part of driving from work or even sitting down at your desk is tuning in to the Mark Steiner Show. Mark makes riding in the car or finishing up some task a completely different experience. If commuting home without the Mark Steiner Show sounds absolutely dreadful, please make a contribution in any amount in support of this program. Take a few minutes now to help pay for those priceless periods of radio relief later on. Call 443-885-2075 or give online at WEAA.org.
This is Sandy Mallory, host of Cool Vibes for Your Midday, bringing you exciting news. Our program now begins at 9 a.m. We'll still have our morning affirmation, tips to help you get through each day, and daily interviews about subjects you need to know about. Plus, the best music, traditional and contemporary, and a bit of neo-soul. Won't you join me? Cool Vibes for Your Midday, now 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. weekdays. Remember, as always, positive reflection is the key.
Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. On our way back to a conversation, I'm going to remind you the Mark Steiner Show is sponsored in part by the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development, where they can help make your home more comfortable and energy efficient this winter. Did you know that October is National Energy Awareness Month? Right here in Maryland, the Maryland Department of Housing offers low-interest loans, rebates, and other resources for low-income qualified residents, all to improve the energy efficiency of your home. So warm up to savings on your utility bill. Visit mdhousing.org or call 410-514-7530 for more information or to see if you qualify. We are here in the studio with our four guests, one by phone. Tyrone Keyes is by phone, principal with a Maryland-based strategic and legislative consulting firm, ARC Adaptus. Dr. John Bullock, professor of political science at Towson University. Dr. Richard Vatz, professor in the Department of Mass Comm and Communication Studies at Towson University. And Bob Summerby, editor of the Daily Howler. We're going to get all these calls coming in. Thank you for calling in. We're going to get to them immediately. But, Rick, I know you have to run. You have an engagement with your wife. That's good.
That's right.
So go ahead.
Thank you very much. I just think that it is significant that Barack Obama wanted to focus on Candy Crowley's insertion that he said this was an act of terror when he didn't. I know you think it's unimportant, but he was so inconsistent on this. And when he spoke to the UN, he implied it was due to the video. I think it was a really dishonest thing for him to do. I don't think it's dispositive in an election campaign, but I think it's significant. And I think that her inserting herself into this debate is wrong. I don't think a moderator should ever be a principal in a debate.
And you responded during the break, Bob.
Well, I think that's a reasonable point. I don't know whether a moderator should or shouldn't say what she said. But
singly say what she said.
I understand. You know, I can see it either way. I will say this, though, Richard. The New York Times reporting from Libya yesterday reported that it was about the video. And the facts are still coming in on this, that the extremist group that came with the heavy armaments was, in fact, angry about the video, that it, in fact, was not a pre-planned 9/11 thing. Now, I don't know if that's true.
The heavy weaponry?
But yeah, they're an extremist, a heavily armed extremist group, and and according to the New York Times reporting, they were quoting Libyans.
Who were not part of the group.
Blah, blah, blah. Yeah. Now, I don't know what's true and what's false and about that, but I don't think it's clear yet, and I'm not quite sure what the difference is.
But it's like everything that happens in the world we want to call terror because it makes us feel better about what we're doing and what happened to America 10 years ago.
It also reflects the simplistic nature that we like to talk about politics. It's either this or it's that. It can be both at the same time. So, yes, there's a demonstration happening regarding the movie, but, yes, there's also a planned coordinated
attack. They're not mutually exclusive, but let me just say, I don't think this was ambiguous, but I will.
I'm sorry you have to leave, Rick, but enjoy your evening.
Thank you very much. And let me just say very, very quickly, it's a pleasure being with somebody from Towson and my good bud Bob Summerby.
Let's go,
and
Tigers.
You, Mark.
Thank you. And Tyrone, I want to go to the phone show. A lot of people are calling in, but let me let you have your say. Then we'll go to Stephen, Johnny, and Eric in that order.
Yeah, I think that, very quickly, I think that if you look at the date on which the attack happened, I think it was more about September 11th, the anniversary, and the fact that certain groups, in the Middle East do not care for U.S. policy, and this is their way of making that known. So I think that the movie has turned out to be a convenient scapegoat for a variety of parties. Also, wanted to add, before I forget, we kind of discussed this during the break. I think that the debate also illustrated for both liberals and conservatives the fact that we have such a limited selection with which to, voice our political opinions in the form of a vote. I think that, Mark, I think you were saying, and I agree.
Yeah, during break, I said, yeah.
Yeah, if we could have a more diverse, in terms of party and ideology, if we could have a more diverse representation as opposed to Coke and Pepsi, which is what we have right now, I think that the country would actually be better served by it.
And I what I said during the break, and then we'll go right to the phones here, was that I thought that we should be following the League of Women Voters rules when it comes to these national debates. Their rules at the moment are, and have been, that if you're on the ballot in enough states where your party could conceivably win the Electoral College, a piece that I don't even think should be around anymore, but if you could win the Electoral College, then you should have a right to debate, which would mean that the Greens and the Libertarians, at the very least, would be in these debates, and they should be in these debates.
And by the way, along with Coke and Pepsi as the candidates, Royal Crown is providing the moderators. So you have an extremely limited universe of topics and considerations. Very limited.
410-319-8888, your thoughts. Stephen, you're on the air.
Yes, how you doing there?
Very well, welcome.
All right, this is what I saw in both debates. I think Barack Obama in the first debate did the right thing to lay back and find out what Mitt Romney was dealing with. And even in that debate, he stated most of the stuff that he stated last night. Y'all had more access than most of the public to all the information. Y'all continue to go on about some things that are irrelevant. The ambassador was killed because he was in a war zone. That's part of life when you're in the war zone. Okay? That's the bottom line of that. Oil prices, the government does not control the oil. Until they make the oil companies build some more refineries, then the prices will go down and stay down. Becoming more energy independent with stockpiling oil and all that does not change the price of what oil is. And furthermore, everybody in there has a job. If this country had collapsed within the last 4 years, none of y'all would be talking that rhetoric. Y'all would be running around trying to survive even more than the people on the bottom are. Most of the people in that room and y'all are talking to had $60,000 or $70,000 combined incomes together or singly alone. So if everybody's always on the radio talking and I congratulate everybody got PhDs and all
the reality. Sorry, man, we can't. We had to cut off because certain language can't be used.
Can't mention PhDs.
Wasn't the PhD, but
I wanna jump right in on this. Okay, my wife and I own businesses. We do not work for a third-party employer, all right? We don't have PhDs, by the way. So in the legal term, I guess you would say we eat what we kill, okay? We're not guaranteed a paycheck every 2 weeks. So we do feel the economy because if we don't go out and work and make something happen on a continuing basis, then we don't pay our mortgage. So we're in tune, and we have our finger on the pulse of this economy.
You know, I will say, as one who does have a PhD, I will tell you that educators do not tend to make a lot of money. And no one goes into education to make money. But when you think about small businesses, I'm glad we come back to this point, because when Obama talks about lowering taxes on those who make less than $250,000, those are the vast majority of small businesses. 97% of small businesses make less than $250,000. And so there has to be some truth when we're talking about some of these tax policies and actually who they're going to help. The same thing we talk about those tax loopholes. Who are they going to serve? What are the specifics going on there? And again, oftentimes we're not getting to the details.
I mean, this discussion just hasn't happened at all in terms of the loopholes and what is. I mean, that is just a non-discussion. It's just a pseudo discussion in terms of the Romney loopholes covering the tax cuts. This is just a pseudo discussion that never got off the ground. I don't think there's ever been a presidential campaign where the press corps made so little effort to discuss the big central proposals, such as they are, and I've already said Obama really could use some, but Romney has some. No effort to discuss it at all. We're just having a pseudo discussion in the press corps. By the way, Romney last night in the campaign mentioned that he started a small business, Bain Capital,
right.
Which started with only 10 partners and $37 million,
right.
Most of it in foreign funds from Central American dictators. So that's a small business, too. So there are a few that aren't in that, that are above that 97%, and it's important to remember that.
Johnny in Baltimore, you're on the air, 410-319-8888.
Back to the first debate, I think Obama's demeanor and everything was more to the fact that most of the Romney communication previous to that was changed, so his preparation wasn't for that content, and he just had to think on his feet. So the best thing to do when you're trying to think on your feet in that case is just shut up, not open the door. But my second major point, though, is that if we got two politicians and we got basically, I don't know, both of them are considered lawyers, but lawyers are legal liars, and I don't think we should look at any of this debate as being what we're going to go on. We're going to have to stay local and work on the things that we know in our communities to make this change happen, because it's not going to happen without any push from the people, period, regardless of who's there.
This caller brings up a very good point, and I was having this discussion with a friend. After the election, I don't care who wins, 99% of America is going to get up the next morning and go to work and have to...
The ones that have jobs.
Regardless of the policies instituted by whether it be Mitt Romney or Barack Obama, we're going to, as individuals and as communities, have to still make things work. So I think there's a great investment in these two candidates, as if on the day after the election, it'll pretty much be the second coming. Or Armageddon, depending on which side you sit. But he's absolutely right. We as individuals down on this level, I think it was Tip O'Neill who said it. Politics is local, and the day after the election day, we'll see that just as well as we see it today.
Look, I totally agree in terms of the local solutions. Again, we have to look at what's happening at the local level, being engaged in our communities. But there are also things from the national level that can help or hinder our local efforts. I think one thing that was interesting was the discussion about assault weapons and the assault weapons ban. One of the questions was regarding that. And we know that Romney supported it when he was governor of Massachusetts, but then won't talk about doing it at a national level. Again, that has a lot to do with who you align yourself with, the National Rifle Association. And that factor. But again, if we're in a place like Baltimore, we know how gun violence is so dramatic and hurts so many lives, injures so many people. And so we have to also make a connection between some of these national policies and even local policies. The same thing with healthcare as well.
And not to monopolize my time here, but let me ask you a question. Who pays attention to gun laws? Is it criminals or law-abiding citizens?
Well, clearly, we can say that law-abiding citizens follow gun laws, but at the same time, if assault weapons were not even available, then one could not even have access to them. So there's no real reason why someone should have access to an AK-47, even if they do hunt.
No, I think you need to take a look at the United Kingdom. Guns aren't available, quote-unquote, But criminals still manage to get their hands on them. I think that's because they're criminals.
And they have much lower gun violence than in America. America has the highest gun violence of anywhere in the world.
England has very little gun violence.
Guns are totally outlawed, so much so that most of the police officers don't even carry guns in that country.
Right.
So it would stand to reason that the amount of gun violence would be lower, but it's still, by and large, criminals committing gun violence crimes as opposed to law-abiding citizens.
Okay. I mean, the whole idea, though, of controlling guns has to do with limiting access to violent weapons, controlling where the weapons are in a society, knowing where they are.
By the way, no one's made any proposals about guns in this
country. Neither one of them
has. I mean, it's just not
President Obama did last night. If you go back and listen carefully, during that discussion, he said, in my next term, we are going to try to get an assault weapons ban. He said that very clearly.
Right, and again, we think about, you know, assault weapons. Again, talking about automatic and semi-automatic weapons. Again, it's not the same thing as a hunting rifle. Again, I think that's important to make that distinction. And again, he talked about the Second Amendment, and we can understand that. But again, I think we have to really be sensible when we're talking about guns and gun violence in America.
We can also be sure of one thing: unless there's more than 60 Democrats in the Senate, there will be no gun law in the next.
Exactly.
So you know,
exactly. That's
nothing's
true.
Nothing's going to get passed.
Right. Right, when people say there's a majority, it's a slight majority. Yeah. You're right.
Well, let's go. I'm going to go back to the phones here. But I mean, one thing that did not occur again was a discussion really about what's going to happen with the economy in any real way. I mean, you know, the Republicans have their talking points about the Obama didn't create enough jobs in America. Democrats have their talking points about he inherited a loss of 800,000 jobs a month. It was bleeding. And in some ways, they're both right. But none of them are talking about what really has to happen to make it work, because we have this kind of crazy idea that we're going to grow our way out of this, and it's not going to happen. And we're not being straight with the American people about what we face and what really can be done and how we're going to do it. I think that's the problem we're facing. There's no, and the media is not pushing.
No, there's
for
no,
substance.
There is no such discussion going on.
No matter
on
what you believe.
Yeah, no, there's no discussion going on in this country. This is not about Romney. It's not about Obama, although it's about them. It's about many other people. There is no discussion of anything going on in this country. You look at the front page of the New York Times, they cover polling and, I mean, just every kind. I mean, it's just a litany of distractions and foolishness. There is no discussion of anything going on in this country. And I'm not saying that either one of these guys has any real proposals. And by the way, the frustrating thing about watching Obama is it doesn't matter what he proposed. He's going to get – there's nothing, as far as we know, nothing he could ever get passed. Because he could never get anything passed through a 60-vote Senate. There's a chance Romney could. If Romney wins, there's a chance he'll be able to get things passed through a Senate, because there will be Democrats to come over. There is no chance. Obama could find the cure for cancer. He couldn't get it passed. Could not get it passed. So what's the point? And that's not discussed. And Obama doesn't bring that up. For some reason, Obama, you know, Harry S. Truman ran against the Do-Nothing Congress. Barack Obama won't discuss this aspect of American politics, which has made it impossible for him to propose or pass anything. I don't know what the strategy is behind that, but it really stops a serious discussion from occurring.
I think the president is up against a rock and a hard place in that respect, and I do agree with you. That's the case. But if he comes out and really rails against that at this time especially, I think he helps Mitt Romney paint the picture of, oh, well, if this guy can't get it done.
No, I agree.
He's an alternative.
Let's go back to the phones of 410-319-8888. See what our listeners, not because they are leaders, also our leaders, our listeners are thinking. 410-319-8888 about last night's debate, about the state of this campaign, and what it says about what we know and don't know in the state of America. And Gil in Owings Mills, you're on the air.
Yes. The first thing that I would like to say is that Obama won the debate hands down. He was very, very aggressive, and he called Mitt Romney out time after time after time. However, we really need to realize that I would not put it past Netanyahu that he may have been behind that film that it just came out to try to influence the election. The bottom line is that Netanyahu do not want Obama in office. If Romney get inside there, I guarantee you that they will bring out a strike against Iran And that could be lethal to all of us because you got China, and you got China backing Iran along with Russia. Therefore, the gas prices will rise, right? The rich will get richer, and Romney's excuse will be the reason why I wasn't able to do X, Y, Z was because national security come first. Republicans are warmongers, I'm telling you. And if he gets in office, I guarantee you that there will be a strike against Iran, and the repercussions could be lethal for all of us.
I agree with the caller, at least when we're talking about the warmongering when it comes to Iran. If you look back to the first debate, Obama was talking about the sanctions that are already in place versus Iran. These are the toughest sanctions. And Romney's response, we need to get tougher. And so Obama says, well, what's the next step? And Romney, you couldn't answer that because really the next step would be war. And so I think that's sort of an extreme position there. But then when you look at, not just the extreme position when it comes to Middle East policy in Iran, but the same thing about immigration. I think Romney put himself in a position where he had to run so far to the right during the Republican primary that he wound up taking on some positions that are really untenable at this point. So the idea of immigration reform is self-deportation. It's hard to defend that at this point. And the best he can say is, I have a plan, too, and I agree with some of the things that that the president has said.
That's one of the rare points last night where there were several where Obama made a statement that was really misleading and Romney's rebuttal was really accurate. The time in the debate when Romney said that Arizona was a model for the nation, he was explicitly talking about E-Verify and nothing else. Mm-hmm. And when he said that last night, he was right, and Obama was kind of giving a misimpression. I researched that a few months ago. There's no question about that. Romney was really trying to get away from praising the Arizona law, it seemed to me, in that debate. And he found something that everyone sort of agrees on to praise. Right. But MSNBC just took that little tiny part of the clip. They've been playing it for months, and Obama played it last night, too. It was misleading, Romney's reaction.
I think MSNBC suffers from what was created another station. It's called Foxitis.
Absolutely.
They all have it.
Every week,
they all have it.
More
they
like
all
it.
Have it.
Every week, more like it.
Let's go to another comment here. Let's see. Tiffany, you're on the air.
Hi. Good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening.
One of the things disturbed me last night about the debate was, of course, Mitt Romney's issues concerning women. And three separate things he identified, he insulted me fully. One, that I have capital gain tax when I complete my taxes. Unfortunately, I don't make as much money as he does, so I skip over that. But that was, he directly looked at the audience during that part, telling how he's going to help us with our capital gains tax, and that was laughable. The second, as a parent, it was insulting to me to know that because I'm a single parent and I'm not married, that my kid is destined to carry an AK-47. It was just completely, it was disheartening because it really showed me how disconnected he was from the average person out here working. And then the worst possible example that he could give to a graduate of Western High School, which I'm very proud of, an all-female institution that promotes academics and independence for females, he stated that he had an employee that couldn't work to 7 and 8 o'clock at night, so he made flexibility so she could go home and cook. I was just completely floored. I've been a very educated voter all of my life. I enjoy the privilege to have the right to vote, but these options of to vote for, just this is laughable. This in no way for a woman, I just can't see how any woman, regardless of race, regardless of economic or social standings, I could not see how any woman could, after last night's debate, consciously still want to vote for this man. I just can't see it.
Oh, that's. I won't say what someone else said about that the other night because I couldn't use the words either about why she's voting for Obama. But any thoughts and comments, Bob? You're about to say something.
I have to say it'd be hard to search for, but I'm almost certain you could search and find liberal politicians describing their efforts to create a flexible workplace, and you'll see liberal politicians being praised by liberals for creating this kind of flexibility for women who want to blah blah blah. I think we tend to react to this kind of thing when it's the other side saying it, mm-hmm. and when our side says it, it's a sign of how thoughtful and wise we are and inclusive. I don't know. I'm pretty sure I've heard Democratic politicians talking about the way they've set up the workplace to be flexible for parents, including women, who blah, 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 blah. I just think that's, I don't know.
Actually a big, that's a tenet of a lot of the, you know, Democrat, and especially when you look at the unions, they're big on that, on flexibility in the workplace. So, you know, the young lady took exception to it, but it's out there, and it's recognized among both parties. I will say this, and I think we've all touched around it, is I think one of the biggest disservices that is being perpetrated on the electorate is by the media. There's nothing investigative. It's all fluff. Shows like this go a long way into getting the public to actually intellectually dialogue about the issues of the day. But still, there's that influence of MSNBC, CNN, Fox. And I watch Fox, and they have an agenda. And I find it interesting to talk with people who swear that MSNBC has no agenda. They're straight down the line objective.
Well, that's absurd.
It is.
You're not going to hear me say that, nor Bob Somerby or anybody else in this panel, I think, Tyrone.
They're out there. But I think that what we have to do as citizens is we have to start to engage more like what we're doing tonight. And kind of take drips and drabs from the news media and use that as the tip of the iceberg for our own research. There's no reason in the world why with the internet.
Time, I'm sorry, because we have to wrap up. But one of the things, let me just wrap up with this because we do have to close, is that what you just said is the reason I picked the panel that we did pick, because people have different political perspectives, but I want to have conversation with people who can actually take a partisan view when they have it, but also have a larger overview of looking at the reality of what we're seeing through our different lenses. And that's why we are trying to pick the people we pick for these conversations, which we're going to try to have every day between now and election time, because I think people want to have it, and we will have it, and they're important to have. I want to thank Tyrone Keyes. You just heard him from his company is Arc Adaptus, a consulting firm for legislative and strategic work. John Bullock is professor of political science at Towson University. Bob Somerby is editor of the Daily Howler, become the show from almost since the beginning. Oh, my God. Rick Vatz, professor of communications at Towson University. And earlier we talked with Aaron Gloria Ryan, who's editor of Jezebel.com. We always have great thinkers from that online magazine as well. Thank you all for being with us tonight. Thank you all for calling in. All y'all who called in just now, I'm sorry we couldn't get to your calls. Came in a little bit too late, but we'll be having more discussions, and you'll be able to get on the air. I want to remind you, support for the Mark Steiner Show comes from the Maryland State Education Association. The Maryland GMAC makes sure kids who graduated from a Maryland high school and whose parents have paid taxes for at least 3 years can pay in-state tuition. On November 6th, voters get to determine if some of our Maryland students can seek a higher education. No matter how you feel about this issue, we want you to vote on November 6th. More information about ballot question 4 can be found at educatingmarylandkids.org. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our senior producer is Dustin Levy. Our producers are Bobby Marvin Holmes, Mark Gunnery, and Stephanie Mavronis. We're engineered tonight by Andre Melton. Our intern is Latrice Eddy. Our theme music is by Walt Matthews, Clean Cuts. To hear this show again, a podcast, any of our past shows, find out information about our guests and the work they do, please visit us on the web at steinershow.org. And for Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.